Take your Bibles and turn to the Song of Solomon, and we are in chapter 7. We're going to go through almost chapter 8. We have one more message in the series. Overarching series for the year is Authentic Church. And we started out by preaching a message on being authentic, and we want to work through those things, beginning with authentic relationships. And so we're almost finished with this, and I realize that some say, well, I don't meet this mold, but you know what? It's God's Word, and I care much. Everybody says, he cares much. I care much about the marriages in this church. I do. And I've seen God working in a mighty way in those marriages. And so if we have to preach 10 months to you if you're not married, that's great. But I'm going to preach 2 months to them that are married, okay? And let's just get something from God's Word. And so that we're in the series Authentic Relationships. In 2 weeks, we will be we'll be quickly approaching Easter, but we're going to start in the book of Proverbs. And I'm pretty excited about that. We're going to look at 4 different things in Proverbs. Authentic wisdom. Authentic women. Ladies, we got this whole service that I'm going to talk to you about what God... I don't know. I'm not a woman. Everybody say amen. Come on. That's right. But the Bible has lots to say about what an authentic woman should look like. Authentic fools. We just need to talk to those that want to be a fool. And let the scriptures speak to that. But we're going to start with authentic fear. And that's coming up in a couple weeks, just so you know. If you're missing it, follow it on the podcast, and we can give you that information after the service. If you need a Bible, we got all our Bibles finally in, so underneath the aisle rows, if you need a Bible, slip your hand up, and they'll just get one to you. Okay. Here's how I'd like to do this today. I'd like to just walk through the text and just show you some things about what's going on here in the text. And then we're going to come back and just, after the fact, give you some things to write down. Okay? And you're like, on that writing down thing, Nate, there's not any blanks on my paper that I filled. No, the whole thing's a blank. Okay? So there's lots to write. And sometimes the Lord works on Saturday night, and so the printer works on Friday. You understand the blanks then. Okay? Starting with verse 1. Remember, we've just come through the honeymoon. We've come through the fight. We've come now to reconciliation and what that looks like. And now, this is a little bit later in their marriage. Now, remember the first time he started complimenting her? Where did he start? Remember? He started up here, worked his way down. Now you notice he's starting at the feet. Look what it says. How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O noble daughter. Your rounded thighs are like a jewel, the work of a master's hand. Again, these are not quotable things that you can kind of say to your wife that might take her off a little bit there. But I want to point out a couple things here in this first one. How beautiful are your feet in sandals? He's taking off her sandals. That's important to understand. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 31, verse 11, it says, the heart of her husband is in the wife that he trusts. A woman in the Middle East would wear sandals out when she was trusted by her husband to go do something. Solomon is saying, I trust you. You may think that's kind of simple, but not every woman had sandals and was able to walk to the market. He's like, you just go, babe, I trust you. And so he says, how beautiful are your this beautiful trust that I have for you. And then he says, oh, noble daughter. Do you remember before he talked in like goats and sheep and bounding down the mountain and pastures and gardens? This was what she knew. Now she knows royalty. And he's saying, babe, you're a princess. Maybe your translation says that you're reading. Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a master's hand. It's recognizing that God is your maker. He's like, babe, God made you. Awesome. That's a good word right there. My wife's been really challenging me to get off the goats bounding down the Mount of Gilead and get onto something that's relevant. Babe, you're awesome. God made you. Can I see how beautiful your feet are in sandals? All right, awesome. So he's just saying, you're trusted, you're noble, you're a work of the master's hand. That's a beautiful thing to say. And as they're getting older together, he's finding different ways to just say beautiful things to her. And as much as you may not think this next statement is a beautiful thing, it really is. Okay? Your navel is a rounded bowl that never lacks mixed wine. And your belly is a heap of wheat encircled with lilies. Yeah. Some of the ladies are thinking, that's probably not what I want to hear. That my belly button's huge and my belly is huge? No. But really, he's just saying, wine, bread, you satisfy me. He's working his way up the body now. Your food and drink to me, your love satisfies me. We get to verse 3. We know what Solomon likes. Can I just say that about verse 3? Also verse 7, also verse 8. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of the gazelle. Okay, we know what he likes there. Now we get into verse 4. And sometimes this is where it goes like awry, and like the people are like, yeah, look what you're calling her neck. Look what you're talking about her nose about. This isn't right, but let's understand it in context. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes are like the pools of Heshbon by the gates of Bath Rabim. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, which looks towards Damascus. Now, granted, word for word these days, guys? No, probably not the thing you should be saying. Babe, your nose is huge. That's how we might translate it. And your neck is so long and slender, you can see over everyone. No, just don't say that. Understand this. He was saying, remember, we went back to this ivory tower, this Tower of David, this beautiful thing. Solomon loved architecture to build things. And he's saying, you're gorgeous to me. Your neck is regal. The way you stand, it's just beautiful. Then he says, your eyes are like the pools of Heshbon. Heshbon was a priestly city by the gates of Bath Rabim. Now, I think about a couple things with pools, right? If you're out working and you come and there's these pools that you can refresh yourself, he's saying, your eyes are refreshing to me. Your eyes are holiness to me. I just love to look into your eyes. That'd be a good way to say it, right? I love to look into your eyes. Guys, we're not really good at that. We're like Solomon in verse 3, our eyes drift, right? And she has to remind us, my eyes are up here. And he's saying, I love to look in your eyes because they refresh me. They're like, there's holiness there. He's saying some beautiful things. Pools of refreshment. Beautiful to look at. Nose. Well, this is kind of interesting because Damascus, Lebanon, that area was the enemy of Israel. And he's saying, listen, you have the ability to sniff out trouble. You guard us. You protect your man. You're aware of the dangers. And then I had a little map, I think, up here. Didn't I, Ben, at this point? Yeah. Kay can't really see it, but know that Damascus is in the top corner over here. And Lebanon was over on the coast there. So above the Sea of Galilee, which was the top larger body of water there, he was saying, as I'm able to look out in this tower towards Damascus and That was the seed of Assyria, the enemy of Israel. You protect me. You were like Mount Carmel. I picture Mount Carmel here. Think about Mount Carmel in the scriptures. Mount Carmel was a beautiful, beautiful place to look at. It was off in the distance, but once you got to it, you could see all the way down into the shore. There was a great battle won at Mount Carmel between the Lord and the gods of King Ahab. Remember that one? Elijah's like, pour water on it 7 times. Right? That was fought in this, and he says in this verse, he says, your head crowns you like Carmel. He's saying, like, you are beautiful. Like we see Everest or K2, or we see Mount Fuji in Japan, and we see it off at a distance, and we're like, that is so impressive. That is so, he's saying, your eyes, your nose, your neck, your whole face, it's beautiful to look on. I can stare at it from a distance. I can stare at it up close. I'm so blessed by this. He's setting the bar high for us, guys. He is. And she was the queen, and he was just blessing her, and comforting her, and lifting her up. And it's evident in verse 6 that he really loves this woman. He says this, how beautiful. You want to know what to say this week, guys? What's my key words? How beautiful and pleasant you are. Wouldn't that be? I think if you were just kind of whisper that to your wife this week, that would just kind of make her feel really good. And wives, don't be saying, Pastor Nate told you to say that. Right? He's telling me to say something that I really believe, so I'm going to say it. Right? How beautiful and pleasant you are. But here's the question. Here's the question, ladies. Just the ladies, look at me. Are you being beautiful and pleasant? Because he's loving her with these verbal affirmations. And he's serious about this because she's beautiful and pleasant. Verses 1 through 6, he's taking off his sandals. He's complimenting her from head to toe or toe to head. He says in verse 7, and now is this where it gets a little bit hashtag racy. Your stature is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. I will climb the palm tree and lay hold of its fruit. Okay, just think about that. Like, you know, the palm trees and they have coconuts or whatever is at the top. And he's like, you are like this palm tree and your breasts are like this fruit that's up there. And I'm coming. I will climb the palm tree and lay hold of its fruit. Oh, may your breasts be like the clusters of the vine and the scent of your breath like apples and your mouth like the best wine. The sexual relationship has now started here. It's interesting, though, he uses the word palm tree. A palm tree in the symbol was a symbol of refreshment in the Mideast, no matter what country you were in. Because in the harshest of locations, listen, I don't want to miss this. In the harshest of locations, if there was a little bit of water, if there was a little bit of a chance of an oasis, a palm tree would grow. And he's saying, in my harshest times, look, don't miss this, ladies. In my harshest times, you were a palm tree to me. You were an oasis. I could go to you. It didn't matter what was happening at work. It didn't matter what was happening between my buds and me. It didn't matter if the project that I was working on fell flat. I knew that I could come home and you, my queen, were a palm tree to me. And in all honesty, sometimes, if I may speak frankly, that is what your husband needs. That you are that type of refreshment to him. In your harshest moments, where do you find rest? He's saying, you're an oasis. And that's interesting because if you remember back to some of our earlier lessons, he's saying, girl, you're like a garden. Remember? He's saying, you're like this garden. But now he moves from garden to oasis. Like, we've endured some things here, but I knew when I came home, my palm tree was there. And I knew I could fall at your feet and you could rub my head and you could comfort me. And I knew that even in our sexual relationship, you are a refreshment to me. And she was the queen and he was blessing her. Now, I'm mindful that not every marriage has an oasis like this. But I'm here to tell you this, that if a man knows, listen, if a man knows he's headed home to a place of refreshment, it won't matter what happened at work. Because he knows he's coming to a place that he can be at rest. A home that is peaceful. An oasis. So how does this all make her feel? You know, part of the thing about this whole subject is she was an insecure person from the very beginning. Remember in chapter 1, she says, I am dark and not lovely, and don't look at me. How does she respond? Because he's talking in all of these suggestive, more than suggestive words, and they're refreshing each other and nourishing each other. And he's like, your mouth is like the best wine. Your breath is like apples. So that's a, right, just side note, like brushing teeth is always a good idea. And then she says, it goes down smoothly for my beloved, gliding over the lips and the teeth. She's talking about the kisses there. They're back to Hebrew kissing. I am my beloved's. And notice how she feels. No more questions. No more thoughts of inadequacy. I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me. Men, that's a precious thing that the wife can feel. She'll never say it. Maybe she will, but 9 times out of 10, she probably won't. But if she can at least think, my lover is mine, and he desires me. She goes on, and now she wants to get away on a vacation. This is awesome, and I can't wait. No insecurity anymore. Come, my beloved, let's go into the fields. Let's go to the lodge in the villages. Come, let us go out early in the vineyard. She wants to get away from all the hecticness. Let us see the vine, if the vines have budded. Obviously, they're still in this idea. I mean, Solomon was a great farmer. Whether the grapes blossoms have opened, whether the pomegranates are in bloom. And then she says this, and this is the first time in the text that she has initiated sexual relationship. She says, there I will give you my love. Her promise was this: let's get away. I've got something special for you. Now, the mandrakes give forth fragrance. I have a picture of the mandrakes here. It was a fruit, much like an apple, known for its aphrodisiac qualities. In fact, in Genesis, Leah says to Rachel, one of her sons brought home mandrakes, and she says, I will pay you for your mandrakes. And Jacob will be mine for the night. And she was going to make little raisin cakes for him. And so this is seen as a provocative statement. The mandrakes will give forth their fragrance. And besides, our doors are all the choicest fruits. And she dictates now, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. So in other words, she's saying, listen, there's going to be the normal way that we have had relations. and there's going to be a new way. But notice she's dictating that. And that's a good place to be, guys. Okay? Because she's comfortable now. She feels the love of her husband. She feels the embrace. And she's like, it's going to be like the old times and it's going to be like the new times. And then she goes on to say something a little bit cloaked, and you might think, this sounds a little weird, but let's understand it first. Verse 1 of chapter 8. Oh, that you were like a brother to me, who nursed at my mother's breast. If I found you outside, I would kiss you, and none would despise me. Now, let's be honest. That sounds a little weird, right? Right? Yeah. Like, I'm going to go find my brother, and I'm going to go kiss you. Unless you understand it in context, the idea of PDA, public display of affection, between a family was acceptable. Between a couple, even if they were married in public, not acceptable. And so she has such desire for her husband because of the love that he has poured out on her. He's like, oh, that, here's my dream, like, I could say you're my brother, because then when we're out there, I could just like, she couldn't even like hold his hand or lock arms. I could do that, and then I could kiss you, and it would be great, and we could, I just want that so much when we're in public. I love you. And this is just kind of where it all goes. I would lead you, I'd bring you into the house of my mother, and she who used to teach me, and I would give you spiced wine to drink, the intoxicating drink, a juice of my pomegranate. And then she says, his left hand is under my head, his right hand embraces me. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. That's the third time that this has been mentioned here, especially in relationship to public display of affection. Basically, she's saying, his desire is for me, and I love that. I really loved reading this part because, well, basically, they're a little bit older in marriage. They've been around the block a little bit. And I love how he treats her and I love her response. He says, I trust you. God made you. You're beautiful. You're royal. You sustain me. You refresh me. You're perfect for me. I want you. I desire you. You are breathtaking. You are my emotional, physical, and spiritual oasis in a harsh world. Now let me ask you a question. Look up here. Especially those of you that maybe have crossed the 10-year mark. Do you think like that anymore? Do you process that beautiful bride that God gave you back on June 10th, 1989, in those same ways? Breathtaking. Oh, stop it. Do you verbalize it? Because she turns around and says, you're my world. You're my everything. I love you, and you're the best, and I want to show you that as we grow old together, it's going to be new, it's going to be old, it's going to be fun. Because we haven't just grown crotchety and mean. They wanted to keep the romance alive. That's our hub for today. Keep the romance alive. I was thinking about this, and I read an illustration that just fit it perfectly. Think about year one. Some of you, it might take you a little bit to get back to year one of marriage, but think about year one. And the wife gets a cold, and you tuck her in bed, and you get her the cold medicine, and you bring it to her, and you lay down next to her and give her more blankets, give her extra pillows. You say, do you want to see Vicks Vapor Rub? Do you want this or that? Can I get you cold medicine? What can I do for you, baby? You smother her until she's like, leave me alone. Now think about year three. Here's the cold medicine. What else can I get for you? Hot tea? Okay, you just stay right there. I'll get you another blanket. You just stay right there. What about year five? You're complaining that she's not covering her mouth as she coughs. What are you doing? You're getting me sick, girl. Cover that mouth. And all the while, she's like, what happened to that guy in year one? I need you. And I say that because I'm horrible. I'm like year five guy. Right? I'm just confessing that. I'm working on it. But little things kill our romance. And we can't let it. Guys, I don't want to hear anything like, I can't be romantic. I'm a man. Men aren't romantic. False. Greatest writers of music. Men. Great chefs. Great artists. Right? Men can be romantic. Give me this. I'm a man's man. Yeah. And you could fail at your marriage. So I wrote this down. Foxes that kill romance. Foxes that kill. Remember, we're talking about remove the little foxes from the vineyard. These are some foxes that kill romance. Sin. Proverbs 18:19 says, a brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city. I wrote down some other ones in Proverbs that I wanted to read for you. Proverbs 17. If you have your Bibles, turn there. Proverbs 17, verse 1. You turn while I get a drink real quick. Proverbs 17, verse 1 says this, better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Sin causes strife. He's saying, like, I would rather eat a piece of bread with you in quietness than have you cook a full meal and we can't even enjoy it together. Back a page or two. Proverbs 15 says this. Look at verse 17. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted ox and hatred within it. You get it there? Like, I am just going to give you coriander and cilantro, but there's going to be love there. And you would rather eat that than the fatted calf with strife or wounding. And when we sin against our spouse even, we wound. And if we don't reconcile right away, when we wound, callousness builds up. And when callousness builds up, well then love and romance flee. Sometimes I think of those wounds like playing guitar, right? And we've got lots of guitars up on stage. And if you were to pick one up and to begin playing it, we would teach you how to play a note real simple. And then we would tell you, play that note for a half an hour. And so you play that note for a half an hour, and then you walk away and you call me the next day and you go, my fingers are killing me. Because you don't have calluses. If you went over and shook Brent's hand and then mysteriously touched all the tips of his fingers, you would feel like, why are they so hard? Because please don't do that to Brent. He's got to go help with spaghetti dinner. But what you would feel is a bunch of hardness that's been built up there so that he could play the guitar without walking away on Sunday morning going, ow! Now, when we wound, we do the same thing. And callous builds up on the heart. And love and romance flee away. What we think, guys, is we're like, well, I said I'm sorry. And we present ourselves as Solomon. I said all those nice things. I said I was sorry. And she's in the room going, I don't think so. because sin has allowed us to wound her, or even vice versa. That leads to more sin and deeper wounds, words of pain, actions, pain inflicted. Fox number one that kills romance, sin. Fox number two that kills romance, age. Age. Here's a picture. I don't know how well it turns out. Okay, it turns out okay. Let's just call this the life of Nate. He's a good-looking guy. I'm really glad that the one at the bottom faded a little bit, though. You know? And the thing with age, my wife remembers that guy in the top corner in the Navy outfit when he came home from the Navy. She remembers that, 162. That was my weight. I weighed that at birth, just checked with my mom. I got down to my birth weight. I was good. I was good looking. We got married shortly after that. I'm not 162 anymore. Says the pot calling the kettle black. Here's the deal, though. When I look at her, I remember that. You remember that one, babe, with the little bow tie, and we were going to a little. We didn't call them dances at Baptist Bible College, but we were going to a dinner. Man, she was hot, like smoking. She wore an outfit. She had a little bow in the back. I still remember that. But you know what? That's not what drew me. It was her inner beauty. And we get caught up in this whole idea of outer beauty and age, and like we're going to trade it up for a better model. The grass is greener with younger. No, it's not. And what hurts our marriages is that we think too much of our outer beauty or our spouse's outer beauty. And then we wound them. I read an illustration this week in relationship to that, just hit to the core. I'm just going to give you part of it. Romance dies when a person focuses on outer beauty rather than inner beauty of her spouse. Outer beauty. Maybe this is going to be a news flash for you. Maybe you're a high schooler who thinks you're always going to be beautiful. Outer beauty degenerates over time. Age takes its toll on every person. I used to have hair. I heard a story of a man who was married to a beautiful woman. Several years after their wedding, there was a terrible automobile accident. The injury caused the nerves of her face to be damaged so that when she smiled, she appeared disfigured. Her mouth drooped significantly to one side. When she realized the permanent nature of her injury, she feared her husband's reaction. Oh, guys, that we would never have to have her fear that. She was raised to place a high value on physical beauty and to work at being beautiful. She could only imagine that her husband couldn't continue to love her because she was ugly, which is how she perceived herself in wake of the accident. I'll tell you the husband's reaction in just a moment. But just understand this. What kills your romance is age. This idea that the outer beauty is more important than inner beauty. The third thing is forgetfulness. How precious were the things that brought you together? Do you remember? Do you remember like what it was? And you're like, I think this is the one. And you go and talk to the parents, and I think she's the one. And you go talk to her parents, and I think she's the one. And tell me why. That's going to be my question. Tell me why. And then you list off like you've got this laundry list, and this is the reasons why. Oh, that's fantastic. But see, as time goes on, you forget unless you make a conscious effort to remember. And romance fails because we are forgetful. Romance requires intention, care, and focus, keeping an active memory of what gave birth to the marriage. And here's the fourth one, and it's really probably the biggest one, laziness. Failing to carve out time needed to keep the fires rolling. It's like anything else. It's a discipline. I think about the guy with the beautiful lawn, right? You ever driven by that house? Maybe you are that house. Right? I've learned that mowing 6 acres takes like a lot of time. And I have to invest a lot of time if I want it to look beautiful. There's a good word there. But if I get lazy, my lawn goes to be a mess. And next thing you know, it's like, I got a lot of work to get back to this. So what do I do, Nate? So does your marriage resemble any of this? When foxes reign in men, significance takes over. And listen to this, men. And I don't think you, I'm not saying that these things collectively are wrong, okay? But as a source of trying to be significant in your life, they're wrong. When men have significant issues because of not working on romance or not working things out with their spouse, they do things like make man caves, have hunting cabins, go coach, kind of live out. I'll get my sufficiency by living it out through my children. Overeat. Even worse, become an alcoholic. Go into adultery. Watch porn. Have a gambling habit. When ladies feel insecure, they do kind of the same thing. They do things that divide. They become a constant Facebook person. They look for second careers, or they seek out new friends. They think of second degrees or maybe a degree. They become dutiful at home. Someone once told me that this week. They do things out of duty, not out of love. And then negatively, they self-medicate. They overeat. They join the wine club or the book of the month club or the women's group club of the month. All because little foxes got in and killed the romance. So quickly, four things that we can do to drive out the foxes and reconcile our marriage. All in favor of reconciling marriages? All right. Maybe the first thing you have to do is ask this question, do I really want to change? I like my man cave. I like my book of the month club. I don't like where you're headed right now. Do you really want to change? Then choose faithfulness over sin. Choose faithfulness over sin. We can wrap it up in three words. Remember these three words? You stood before a preacher. The preacher said these three words. That you will love, honor, and cherish them all the day of your life. Now choose faithfulness over sin. And if we have wounded with words or actions, we need to choose to be faithful to our vows. That means we love. Well, I can do that. But can you? Your incessant desire to be right, can you set that aside for God's glory and the sustainability of your marriage? Well, yeah, I can do that, but that's not good enough. If you're in a wounded state where romance may never happen, you need the power of the Holy Spirit in that marriage. You need to be on your knees with your spouse, praying for that to happen. So choose faithfulness over sin. Choose inner beauty more than external beauty. Proverbs 31:30 says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Remember that story I had shared with you earlier? I obviously it was well crafted for this study. She was about to be revealed after this horrible accident, and her husband came into the hospital room after doctors had removed the bandages from her face. He looked at her and he smiled. And she smiled back and watched closely for his reaction. And he studied her for a moment. And then sweetly and sincerely he said, That looks kind of cute. And then he reached down towards her. And he pushed his lips the same way that mirrored her lips. And he kissed her gently. He saw her inner beauty and not her outer beauty. We need to choose the inner beauty. Not only is Solomon praising her external beauty, he is saying, you're royal, you're made by God, you're pleasant, you're trustworthy. Men, I want to speak to you for just a minute. So look up here. The sin of pornography hits you hard in this area. The world has said, this is what the woman needs to be like. And she is saying, I can never be that. And you're saying, this is what I want. And God is saying, that's not what I gave you. The lustful looks at someone God never intended for you to have. Yeah, but Solomon had Solomon had 700 wives, and it cost him his family. It cost him his kingdom. It cost him the nation. Imagine it's your kid on the other end of the lens. Ladies, if I may say this, let's not immerse ourselves in the guy who looks awesome in the movies. Who's totally ripped. That guy spends more time in the gym than he does at home. You be satisfied, both of you, with what God has given you. Malachi 2:14 says that we are to love the wife of our youth and nothing else. Nurture it, praise it, edify it, inner qualities of your spouse. Number three, recall past moments that enrich your marriage. I think I wrote for that. Choose to prioritize the precious past moments. Choose to prioritize the precious past moments. If sin and age and forgetfulness wound, words heal, not as quick as actions, but they give her a calming assurance of a return fellowship. Do you guys have an active memory? Look, do you have an active memory about what birthed this marriage? That was a real challenging thing for me to think about this week. What? I can remember meeting her. She's just bounding up the stairs. She's a beautiful girl. I can remember fights that we had. I can remember walking her to class. I can remember the one time that I got out of the car and left her in the car, and I just went to the room, and I thought it was all over. I can remember those things, I'm telling you, her inner qualities are so much better than all those other things. Do you remember them? Do you have an active remembering? Solomon is saying these all over and over again. We live in a now society who doesn't remember beyond last week. Amen? I'm saying it again. We live in a now society who doesn't remember beyond last week. Here today, gone tomorrow. You don't want that with your spouse, do you? I think the greatest example of this happened on my birthday. Few of you were there for the dinner that we had at my folks' house on my birthday. And for some reason, the story of how they met, Mom and Dad, 53 years this year, right? And they were telling it and retelling it. And they couldn't get through it without weeping. That was a lesson. That was a lesson right there. And sometimes we get forgetful and we need to remember the things that birthed the marriage in the first place. Really, it comes down to this. Keep your vows. Choose to keep your vows publicly and privately. What do I mean by that? Remember those vows? Love, honor, cherish. Ephesians 5 says that we're to love like Christ loved the church, man. That's pretty serious. We celebrated that today in communion. Is that how you're loving your spouse? Ladies, you're to submit. Well, I don't like that word. Listen, submission is key in everything, including salvation. We all have to do it. Honor. Things that kill honor: gossip, public humiliation, sinning with your eyes in a lustful way, belittling her in public in front of the kids. Verses 1, 5, and 1 through 6, he is outpouring his great love and honor for her, especially in verses 1, 5, and 6. In verses 11 through 8, 4, she is outpouring herself because of his honor. Cherish. Cherish is a word that means to protect, to care for, to hold dear, to keep in one's mind. When I think of cherish, I think of that couple that you always see, and everybody's like, oh, it's like an older couple walking through the park, arm in arm, and it's like they've been married forever. You know? Oh, Jesus was born when they got married. Oh, aren't they precious? Right? And you're like, oh, yeah, because he cherished that relationship. And she wants to be with him. And she cherished that relationship with him. And he wants to be with her. The other thing there's a fact that Josh McDowell came out with a while back. Do you know that 90% of all high schoolers couldn't imagine their parents having a physical relationship by the time they were seniors in high school? And see, I think this is a good picture for us, because we sometimes get so busy in doing other things that we don't stop and like want to hug on our wife in front of our kids. We don't want to honor her in front of our kids. We don't want to cherish her in front of our kids. Do you ever remember walking in and your parents were like smooching, and you're like, oh, don't stop that. They need to see that. They need to see how much you, because whenever the question arises, they can always in their mind go back. I always go back to that with my parents. I try to do it all the time with my wife so my kids catch us. Okay? All right, closing thoughts. Worship team's coming. Us and us. Here's really the story of this. You become what you give. Your relationship becomes what you give. You don't give much, the relationship's not going to be much. She was his respite and his oasis. To her, he was tender. Romance is giving, appreciating, valuing your mate, doing the unexpected. Respect and tenderness. You know, men, just a little. You ever hear that song, Try a Little Tenderness, right? No? Okay. It'll come on the radio and be like, Pastor Nate was just singing that. Ladies, see romance in tenderness. Ladies, men, see romance in respect. And you know what happens when tenderness doesn't happen? She ain't respecting. And when respect isn't there, he ain't being tender. So you become what you give. Turn away from selfish pursuits and embrace your spouse of your youth. That's really the key here. It's about selfish pursuits. I want this in my marriage. I want that. I want. There's a problem with the I. Okay? So the us and us. Let's wrap this up there. A lot of great phrases you can say in there. But what about Jesus and us? We get a picture of Solomon who is loving a woman that she cannot. She just can't handle how much she's loving. Ironside wrote this in a commentary in reference to Song of Solomon. He said, it's a wonderful thing to know that the Lord has far more delight in his people than we ourselves have ever had in him. Someday we will enjoy him to the fullest. Someday we will be more than everything. He will be more than everything to us. But as long as we are here, we will never appreciate him as much as he appreciates us. Our bridegroom loves us. I just want you to know that. He loves us in a wonderful, powerful way. We can only hope to give him that same kind of love. Now, if you're here today and you're struggling in your marriage, good news. There's hope. We've given a few things here to do. Choose to put off sin for faithfulness. Choose inner beauty over outer beauty. Choose to remember, prioritize those memories of what brought you to the place that you're at. 20 years of marriage, 5 years of marriage, whatever it is. Get back to the things that brought you to the altar in the first place. It comes with humility. It may not be what you want at the moment, but it is what you need to humble yourselves. The two of you come together to work it out. We can give you help. Isn't that great news? The church is here to help. And I'm here to tell you, if you need help, we just hired a guy. Maybe you heard of him. His name is Jeremiah. And in all seriousness, if you're struggling in these things, why? Why? We're just going to stand to sing a little song we sang a couple weeks ago. And maybe we could just do verse 1 and the chorus twice there. And then, of it as well. Okay? So let's stand and we'll sing this together. And then I've got a special announcement after that.